ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Hour number two of Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game, taking you until 3 o'clock, the special summer hours. If you've been in and out of pocket, Caroline Fenton has moved on from the show. We congratulate her. Derek Mason off on vacation. In fact, they are both in Europe right now, and we have pinpointed, Nick, that they are texting, because we're on the text chain. I don't know why. They could eliminate us from the equation, but they're both in Paris. Who knows? Maybe their families will be hanging out.
They're just showing off.
Yeah, they're rubbing it in.
Yeah. D-Mace got his kids out there. Caroline, but Caroline's got a new gig when she comes back. We'll be hearing from her in the future, but not as a regular on the show. So in the meantime, Willie Donick here with you, along with Hal Gill, who's been guest hosting throughout the week here. And so we decided with the big, big Game 6 tonight, we wanted to get some good hockey perspective. And a good friend of Hal's, Andrew Raycroft, who is a former goalie, teammate of Hal Gill's for the Boston Bruins, now works with the Bruins on Nesson. Analyzes their games, and you can also hear him on the NHL radio, the Sirius XM channel, which I do often as a co-host there. He's a frequenter there.
Yeah,
excellent
busy
analyst.
Man.
Yeah, he's a busy
man. He was even doing college hockey.
I'm sure he's very busy tonight as well with Big Game 6. But Andrew, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
Nothing to it. Happy to be on.
All right. Well, first, just give us your thoughts on Game 6 tonight. I think... I'm sure up in Boston, even though the Bruins are out and it's disappointing that they didn't get further, I have to believe there's a lot of curiosity. The audience for this game on a broad scale is going to be good for hockey, especially with being on network TV. It's free, and that can only be good for the league.
It is only good for the league, and I'm excited that the Oilers have pushed back here the last couple of games, and now... As Skillsy knows, in the Stanley Cup Finals, Game 6 is must-win for both teams. We've got to that point, and that's what's exciting. And not to mention, and probably most important, we all get to see the greatest hockey player on the planet playing in these games, and he has certainly showed up the last couple of nights.
We had a great conversation yesterday because we had Jeff Fisher, the longtime Tennessee Titan coach, and it was just a different outside perspective, and we were just talking about when you're coaching or playing against guys who are just the super freaks, right? They're not just superstar players. We're beyond that with McDavid and just trying to contain them, because those are the guys that over time, they're going to have those great moments. So it's interesting to watch McDavid on this stage from that perspective.
Yeah, it's nuts. And what he's been able to do to get 4 points in both of the last two games, first time that's ever happened, it's special. And yeah, if you're a Florida Panther fan, you have to hope that and assume that he's not going to get four tonight, but can you contain him to just one? If you just give him one, maybe two, you have a chance. Any more than that, he's taken over the game.
Razor, you know Canada is buzzing. Is it all of Canada, though, or is it like can we see Calgary cheering on Edmonton? Like, is that even – like, because it's got to be Canada against the world. Canada needs to win. McDavid needs to win. Is that the buzz that you think is happening up there? You're going up there pretty soon, too.
I'm up there in a couple weeks. My buddies they're pulling for Canada. Of course, I don't think people in Calgary are per se. But the other thing is, too, I think now that it's gotten to this point, I think that's even the people that didn't want to see Edmonton win at the start might want to see the comeback story and see what McDavid's doing and say, we'd really like to actually see him win. And the other thing is, too, is Florida's easy to not like. And the more you watch them, the less you kind of want them to win, too. So Yeah, I would say all of Canada at least wants a win tonight to see Game 7.
That sounds like a bitter Bruins fan.
Watch
Florida's easy not to like. You just love it, Kachuk with his mouthpiece hanging out. That's a face you want to punch.
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. and yeah, seeing them 6 times this year and 7 times last year, everyone in Boston, I can promise you, wants Edmonton to win.
So what do you think? Would you almost – I can only imagine the weight of Game 7 after you were ahead 3-0. So I floated this as a theory out yesterday, Andrew, of is it almost better to be the road team right now if you're the Panthers, despite all of the hoopla and things like that, because you're away from everybody, you're isolated, you're not hearing it every day from what's going on, you guys have blown the lead, what's happening? I almost think their better chance of winning is tonight.
I agree 100%. I think they're this game more than even the last two, and what you would think, especially in Game 7, is this is a game no one's expecting them to win. And this is the first time they've played that role in this series, and I think it does suit them to be in Canada, to be in their little shelter. And now they've gone away from having to get people out, right? They probably tried to get people out in Game 4. Maybe you'll see the Cubs. Certainly in Game 5, I'm sure Gilsey knows this, being in the finals. Everybody calling, we want to see the Cubs. Now they're not getting that. Everybody's probably nervous in their circles. No one wants to talk to any of those guys in the circle because everyone's gotten nervous. And I think that can play a huge role for them in relieving some of the pressure. Now, if they go down early in this game or lose this game, then now you have the weight of the world on your shoulders because you don't want to be that team that blew a 3-0 lead.
Oh, the worst. Just the worst.
Oh, my God. That would be – I mean, they're tight right now, right? Like, they're nervous, but they can talk themselves out of it a little bit. But if they lose this one, they're not talking themselves out of feeling like they're chokers.
Yeah, just crawl into a hole until this next season. Hey, Willie, we got to shift gears here because we got to get Razor's goalie thoughts.
Yes,
because we got stuff going on here. Of course, we have Saros. Lankinen would be a free agent, and then we have. I don't know if you've followed Askarov and seen what Yaroslav Askarov is doing in Milwaukee. I'm sure you've seen the videos of him bench pressing the goal. I know you wanted to do stuff like that when you were playing.
I wasn't strong enough.
But, you know, we just wanted to get your thoughts on the goaltending circuit that's going on. We can start off with Ullmark and Swayman. What's the story there?
So I'll ask you guys questions on the national stuff at the end of this, but Ullmark seems to be the next domino. I know as much as Linus has been great for the Bruins and they love him, I think he's a big piece. He's the next piece, it feels like, in goal in the league. And I think the Bruins would like to be able to move on from him just to have the $5 million to spend elsewhere, knowing that Jeremy Swayman's going to get a big ticket and he's the guy. He's certainly the guy of the future here. The way he played in the playoffs and his character is number one material. So yeah, it feels like the Bruins are going to try and do everything they can to move Ullmark. It's gotten a little tighter with the market, move with Markstrom, New Jersey getting their guy, LA getting their guy.
Yeah.
So there's only
Markstrom. There wasn't much to give up for Markstrom, I didn't think. I mean,
well, that's what's kind of interesting. Do the Bruins take a 5th-round pick just to move on from Linus, or are they holding that value and maybe see that an opportunity later in the season? I guess that time will tell quickly on what they think. But from my point of view, I would take a little less to move on. I that's kind of my view. Probably not the same in Nashville, guys. I would assume if you're moving on from UC, you want everything, whatever any team's going to give you. And then with the Askarov stuff, it's not the end of the world to have him and Saros together and have Saros on a deal, have some security there, and you might be able to move on from those guys later. I'm curious where you guys are with that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that because we have questions for you being a goalie that came up at an early age. There's so many pieces this? When is a guy ready?
Little Razor was thrown to the wolves.
And did quite well, right? Won the rookie of the year.
He was our savior for a while. It just, you know, what were you, 19 years old when you came? 20 years old?
Just turned 20.
Just turned 20 and he got thrown in. And
wow.
Mike Keenan was asking him to save the Bruins season.
But Hal, you've been asking sort of everybody when we have these conversations about the trend of needing two goalies.
Yeah, we talked to Elliot Friedman yesterday. We were talking about the trend. I mean, how many games did you play in Toronto? You're up like 75, and we lost all the seven other games that you didn't play. We lost and missed the playoffs.
72 games in 06-07. I'm looking at the stats right now.
Games he played. But I don't think goalies can do that anymore. So the trend, I think, has turned to, you know, you can't just have a one and a two. You need a 1A, 1B. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at. It's not a bad thing to have Askarov around and then have Saros and him balance it. It's not the worst thing ever. Do you think they're trending towards two goalies that you need to have?
Yeah, you do. And I think Saros is, you know, he's kind of bucked that trend the last few years, but I think the reality is he'll be even better when he's only playing 55. And you have a young guy who can learn a lot in those 30 other games and injuries and taking a week on or 2 weeks on as a young guy, but not
and getting the practice time as well, right?
And just learning the league, right? It being on the plane and flying and traveling and learning. Askarov's certainly ready for that and needs to be in the NHL. Like he absolutely needs to be in the NHL, and I think it wouldn't be the worst thing if he takes 10 more starts off Saros' plate. I think you're going to get better goaltending from both of them doing that.
Because you went through it. What's the adjustment? The adjustment from – because I know the AHL guys, they can shoot. They can pick corners. They got great shots. But there's something different about an NHL player, the delivery, the way they shoot, the way they set up a pass and sell shot and then pass. Can you explain the difference? Because everyone's looking at Askarov and saying, this guy's awesome. You got to put him out there. But it's a big jump. And can you explain what a goalie's looking at for that jump?
Yeah, and for me, it's the nights you don't feel that good. That when you're in the minors, you can get away with it. Because there's great players there, and it's a great league, and it's really hard because it's chaotic at times. But you're on a lot of teams, the third and fourth lines, when you're a guy like Askarov, you're saying they're not scoring on me no matter what. Where in the NHL, the third and fourth lines, they can tear you apart for three or four goals on any given night when you're not feeling good. So it's learning how to only give up two or three goals in the National Hockey League when you're not feeling good. The talent he has when he's good and he feels great, no one's, you know, you're going to make a bunch of saves and you're going to win. It's Tuesday night and you're not really feeling it and you have to find a way to get your team a 3-2 win. That's what you need to learn. And you really don't know how a goalie will handle that. And you don't really know what that is as a goaltender until you do it. And that for me is what the experience young guys need to learn and have.
Andrew Raycroft is with us, longtime NHL goalie for the Bruins, for the Maple Leafs, a couple other teams thrown in there, now an analyst for Nesson up in Boston. It does a lot of national coverage on SiriusXM NHL radio. Andrew, you came up, you've got a unique experience. You came up and you referenced your debut was at 20, and then you won the Rookie of the Year, the Calder Trophy, at 23. But by and large, right, people see a lot of skaters come up, even at the best, 18 and 19, and make immediate impacts. It does seem like it takes longer to master the craft of goalie compared to other positions. But that only lends itself to people still getting impatient. They see a talent like Askarov, and they're like, he's ready. But why do you think goalie play in particular is that much tougher to master? And we see a lot of late bloomers who come up at 25, 26 even, and have great long careers.
You can't hide. you can't change your role either. As a younger guy, even a Connor Bedard, right? Let's take the youngest and the best as an example. He's not scoring every single night. And there's certain nights where he can, you know, he can figure it out on the PK, or he can just be bad. And it's really not a big deal, where as a goaltender, you're bad, you're losing. And the team's losing and the pressure's on. And then it's hard to go back to that. It's hard to keep your confidence up. So I think the big thing is, teams, organizations want to stay a little more patient because you really want to be sure that the guys had those games, those reps in the minors, and you can't hide him in the National Hockey League. But also, it's just so – the margin is so thin for goaltenders. And UC Saros is considered an elite NHL goaltender, but if he makes one less save a week, then he's average. It's one shot on every 100, you go from a 92 save percentage to a 91 save percentage, and you're just average. So that the fact that you're so important as a goaltender, but also that the margin is so thin, really lends itself to having older, experienced guys rather than the young crew.
So, Andrew, UC Saros is unique, right, with his size, his background. And he's got elite seasons in the regular season. What people here look at is they say, well, he hasn't taken them on a run yet. And here he is. They're talking a lot about the extension of a contract. And there are those that are saying, you know, because they heard the trade rumors, hey, maybe they should trade Saros. They've got a scar off. But it does seem like the message from the team is they would like to re-up with UC Saros. They believe he's elite. From afar, what is your scouting report of Saros?
Yeah, I think he's elite as well. I think because of, and again, I think of that he's elite because of the consistency, because the amount of games he's played, his ability to, last season, let's say, at the end of last season, right, he basically carried the young group in front of him. He was, and got them really close to the playoffs. The argument of playoff runs is somewhat separate, I think. You see Stuart Skinner. You see Darcy Kemper. You see Aiden Hill. These guys, the last few years, winning Stanley Cups, haven't been considered elite. And I think it's hard. The game's different now. Back in Sebastian Giguere in 03, you go back in the old days where goalies would go on runs and you couldn't score on them. Now there's 5-on-3 power plays in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Guys are scoring and winning 5-4. So I think what happens in front of you, it makes it so much harder to win in the National Hockey League now, especially come playoff time, that you can't just look at Saros and say, I think it's a little unfair, I guess, is the way I look at it. I look at Bobrovsky up until, you know, 2 years ago or 18 months ago, they thought he was dead in Florida. And now he's got a great team in front of him. He goes on 2 Stanley Cup runs, and now he's a Hall of Famer again. So you need a lot in front of you to go on a Stanley Cup playoff run now. And I'm not necessarily sure that Saros has had that support in front of him the last playoff runs that he's been a part of.
I think that's fair. And so, Andrew, the other part of the equation is, in a hard salary cap, there are those that say, well, you got to give him a raise. He's a great bargain at 5. But if you're paying him, say, around $8 million, oh, boy, you just use the examples of other teams that have been able to win without paying their goalie that kind of money, even though I think the market is going
to
reset with Shesterkin and Ottinger and guys
that
you know
well. You have to be pretty special, right? You have to be like Luongo. You played with Luongo. Yeah. You got to pay those guys.
So I guess the question is a guy like that worth it? Do you say, yes, invest in the goalie, even if – teams have one without the quote-unquote elite goalie?
Yeah, I think it, when you have one, you still want it. And that's the thing. Like, it's easy to say, well, these teams are winning without them, so why don't we get rid of ours? Yeah. But
then you look at the Devils that just lost everything because they couldn't get a goalie to make a save.
You still need a goalie making saves 82 times of a season, and you still want to, first and foremost, get into the playoffs. And that's what an elite goaltender does for you. It almost makes it automatic. If you have an okay team in front of an elite goalie, you're going to get in the playoffs and then see what happens. So, you know, and again, the other thing that can happen, well, two things. One, the cap's going up. a lot over the next 10 years, you know, barring another pandemic. And I think $8 million won't feel like a lot. Well, yeah, no kidding. I was tongue-in-cheek, and, you know, I said it just to make sure that it never happens again. It's ridiculous. And so the cap, I don't know if $8 million or $9 million, whatever he's going to get, is actually a lot in 5 or 6 years. And if your team is at that point and Askarov is that in 4 or 5 years, then you can trade a guy like Saros and have your $5 million guy and find another $3 or $4 million for your roster.
That's a great point. Great point. Can we get Razor back to like my line of questioning?
Absolutely.
I'm sick and tired of talking about goalies. Good Lord. Yeah. A bunch of targets back there. They just clean up our mess.
Yeah, <that's right. laughs>
Keep your mouth shut. Awesome. So we were talking before you came on. We were talking about first of all, you know, guys you hated to play against. Is there anyone you can think of that you just hated to play against? And then you know, we were talking about best guy to go have a beer with. Do you have NHL guys that fit those two categories?
Well, you know, you're setting yourself up for some love for that one.
Yeah, I better be one of your. I'm coming up soon. I better have a beer ready for me.
Yeah, of course, and you know that's the case, and you know that there's basically no one dragged me out the same way that you did. So I really had no other choice but to hang out and have.
I get that.
I pay his wife handsomely to take him out.
Yeah, right. She loves you. So yeah, skills, he's at the top of my list there, and that's the God's honest truth. If he wasn't, I would enjoy saying so right to his face, but it wasn't. Hal is the best, and I mean, as a goalie, like, I think of like a Nashville guy, Shea Weber. Like, that's just no fun having him take slap shots on you. You know, like, everybody else, like, if guys score goals on you, it's okay. It's just no fun getting hit in the collarbone by a Shea Weber power play one-timer.
No idea where it's going to go.
No, exactly. And it's coming high. 1,000,000% it's coming high, and you have to stand in there. So I think of the Shea Weber type guys were no fun to play against.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. All right, Andrew, before we let you go, are we going to see a game 7? What do you think?
My heart is really hoping for it, but my head's saying Florida closes this out. They're not good. They can't lose 3 in a row in the Stanley Cup Finals. They're too good. I think Florida gets on the road and they find a way tonight, but I'm really hoping for a 7.
I'm leaning your way, but game 7.
Florida's a better team. They should win, but come on, give us a 7. Give us a game 7.
We want the drama.
Yeah.
We want it.
Andrew, great stuff. Enjoy listening to you. You're off and on right when we're done with our show. I flip it on and you're on with Steve Koulias. It is interesting how many times, whether it's you co-hosting or somebody else, that Hal's name pops up. I don't know if Hal has like this underground payment system to keep like PR.
I took Koulias out for a couple beers and we've been buddies ever since. And
he's got a system somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget, Skillsy's like old as dirt, so he's been around forever. That he's just like crossed paths with everybody at this point. But yes, he is Cooley's darling. There's no question.
Don't say that about me.
All right.
Wait, do you see the old hips coming out of the truck when I land in Boston? That drive up there, you want to see a fossil move? Watch me.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot for your perspective. Great stuff.
Thanks, Razor.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk to you down the road. Andrew Raycroft, excellent analyst. I really enjoyed his perspective.
That was, you know what, that's a good point. You know, if you have him. Saros, Askarov, you know, it's a good point. If you give Askarov 30 games, it's something I didn't really think about. But moving forward, you have two great goalies and –
you can keep them for a while. That's what I've always said.
You're assuming the salary cap's going to go up. So you talked about percentage of salary. You know, it's not as much. It gets lower as the years go on. So that's certainly something to think about.
We'll get back into this conversation with some things that we heard from Andrew Raycroft and some things we've compiled over the week.
He's going to be so happy he said something I didn't know.
So we had great perspective from Raycroft on the goalies. We had Elliot Friedman yesterday with the market.
Yeah.
And Scott Nickel with our update where he, you know, some really good stuff on the Milwaukee guys. Are they close to being ready? Askarov being part of that equation. So we're going to try to put it all together as we set the table for some big moves. And one of the big things, we're going to play it when we come back, Elliot Friedman kicking around the league. He says, I always make phone calls before I come on with you guys to see what kind of pulse I get. And he got one theme back about how busy the Predators are going to be. We'll play the clip for you when we come back. Just getting started. We're talking hockey. If you want to join us, you got hockey questions, Predators questions. What'd you think of what Andrew Raycroft said there? 615-737-1025. We're coming back with more after this.
As you know, I always like to check around to see what Nashville's up to before I come on. And I had one manager who kind of laughed yesterday and said, I think Barry's going to try to keep you very busy. So I think he's got a lot okay. of irons in the fire. And I think he's looking at a few different things. And, you know, I think both potential, whether it's free agency or trade, I think Barry is active out there.
So there you have it. That's the scuttlebutt around the league. It's not just Elliot Friedman's opinion, but we know that's the beauty of having the insight of an Elliot Friedman every week on our station, and we're thankful for him, is because he's constantly talking to people around the league to get the pulse. Yep. And that's so different than somebody sitting in a chair like ours where we could say anything. Oh, I think the Predators are going to be active. Well, what is that based on? Like, it could just be
you think that,
but he really bases it on talking to a lot of
people. It was funny because, you know, when I came in the league, he did that. I don't want to say it was a fluff piece, but he did my quarterback piece, and it was cool.
Which we talked about yesterday.
It was a hockey night in Canada. It was a fluff piece, you know, and talking about me, had clips of me being a quarterback and everything. And now Elliot has worked his way up. And now not only is he digging around, but the GMs go to him. The GMs are using him
to try to get information.
Get information, like
almost an exchange of information.
Yes,
sometimes.
And so he's kind of, you know, he's in with everyone, and so he's got a really good pulse. He's one of the three or four guys that are kind of on top of that, and they use him a lot. And so it's great getting his perspective because he doesn't want to come out and show all his cards. He's not going to betray any one of the GMs, but he can throw in. You know, he's not going to give us specifics with who Barry Trotz is talking to, but he will say, hey, a lot of GMs are saying Barry's been active.
You know,
he called it irons in the fire.
Yeah.
Irons?
You played in Boston, Toronto, Montreal, among other markets. I think right now, with Barry Trotz as the GM and his weekly appearances on our radio station and Elliot's weekly appearances, I think our market, if you are really listening, you could be as informed as any other market. And that's with all of that and what has, to me, been the themes that come up every time. And you just heard Andrew Raycroft. The themes that come up The themes coming from them are, we want to sign Soros.
Yeah.
The Predators are going to sign Soros. Yes, they did sort of field calls. But they've come around to a point where it's, okay, here's the vibe. Here's the feeling from both sides. Soros wants to stay. They want to sign Soros. Despite all of that, it's amazing to me that so many people still are like, well, they got to trade Soros because they have a scar off. Bring up a scar off. That's still, it hasn't changed a lot of people's minds, at least from, maybe it has among people that don't call the show as much. But I'm surprised how many people are still kind of dug in on that thinking. When, to me, all of the questions I've had have sort of been answered on how a Skarov could... You just heard Raycroft. Without us asking about it, go up alongside of Soros for a few years. $8 million isn't that much in the next cap.
Let me ask you this, because you've been in this market forever. You know, you've seen it grow.
Since before the Predators were in existence.
And this is no knock on David Poile, but the fan base has been groomed by David, who is very... Hush, hush. He didn't want to say anything wrong.
I think he opened up more in his later years than he did at the beginning.
Yeah, true. But he really didn't give too much. And he didn't give too much because if he changed his mind, he didn't want to be fully committed. In other words, he wouldn't come out and say, hey, we're just going to trade Soros and then go tomorrow. Oh, no, we're going to keep him.
Yes.
I think Barry Trotz was very,
very transparent.
Very open and transparent and saying, well, I'm looking around at options, I love Juice. We would want to sign him, but if we get the right deal, we'll look at that. And he'll say the next day, we want to sign him. We don't really think there's a good deal. Like, he's very transparent. And he talks a lot with the media. He's on, you know, I'm always blown away. Like, I find it painful to talk to Jared, but Barry seems to enjoy it. And he wants those challenging questions, right? Go ahead, you know, say your stupid question.
That's what's great about that. And I'll give you my honest answer. Jared asks the right questions.
He does a good job.
Not the easy questions, and Barry is ready for those questions.
And for a fan base, that's great that you get that information. And it's not just, you know, I'm never coming on your show because I don't want to have to answer the hard question.
And I do think that has been a traditional, like going back old school, there has been, especially with the GM. I don't think a lot of GMs do weekly interviews, do they?
No, not that I've seen. And I remember
they want to, because they don't want a lot of what they say to travel around. Yeah. But I think there is an upside of being transparent.
Yeah, I remember my GM in Montreal. He signed the team. I was one of them. And they said, "What do you think of the team?" And he goes, "I have no idea. I haven't seen him play yet." I put together the guys I want. But I don't know what they're going
to
look like.
Well, Bill Guerin is an interesting guy to listen to when he does radio. He's very engaging.
Yeah.
But if you give him a question that would suggest, hey, what do you think your record's going to be? Do you think you can contend? He goes, look, I just put the pieces together.
Yeah.
I think we can be successful, but I'm not going to get
pinned
down.
Players will decide,
saying,
just let Barry Trotz.
Right. So there's a way you can do it.
And there's also a level of respect to the players and the coaches.
And to the other teams. And, like, and, you know, the
yeah,
other teams are
right.
doing,
they're doing the same thing,
all
right?
The same things.
But it's
doing.
Also a level of respect. Barry Trotz will tell you what he thinks right to your face. He's going to say it to Philip Forsberg right to his face. And he tells you how it is. And then he's going to go tell the media what he just told Phil. You know, he doesn't say everything, but he's honest with the way he communicates, and I think, you know, that's, you have to respect that.
We had a great interview with Scott Nichol earlier this week as well. I'm going to get Nick to play a clip on one guy. We talked about several players, and that is one of the things as a theme.
Great guy to talk to because he knows,
yes,
the organization up and down.
So as you prepare yourself, if you are following this team to, I think, you know, the most exciting part of the summer in terms of how the Predators are going to try to go about improving. We have laid the foundation by telling you they have a lot of salary cap space, they have a lot of draft picks, and they have a lot of prospects. So there are different ways that they can go about trying to improve. But what they do is very much in question, which makes for great debate on airwaves like this. So we're trying to get you as much insight as we can. So here is one guy that I thought was interesting with Scott Nichols' perspective, and that's Zach LaRue, who led the entire AHL in scoring in the playoffs. And yet, he's still very, very young. This was his first year fully playing in the AHL, and he had that much success. But as we talk about with a lot of prospects, you don't know exactly what that's going to mean next year or even the year after that. It's no guarantee that he blossoms and becomes a star. But the Predators are, you know, one great way to get better is just to have these internal sources of young players, one or two of them, to really make an impact quick. So here's what Scott Nichol had to say about Zach LaRue, who is one of those guys that he's a very talented player, but he's an emotional player. He's a guy that likes to push the envelope,
turns it up.
He'll get under people's skin, but he can cross the line at times. He has been suspended many times throughout his youth and even up in the Milwaukee days. But here's what Scott Nichol had to say about his development at the end of the season. But it is a process, isn't it?
It takes time. Like, usually they come up, play a few games, they get a little bit overwhelmed, and then they go down, get some confidence, and then you just kind of start that process. You can't have too many of them start all at the same time. Like, Luke is a good example of that, where his year was a little bit of a roller coaster ride, and then he finally, you know, caught his second wind after probably the All-Star break, and then he was good to go. But it's hard. It's a man's league. These kids are just still kids. They're 20 years old, and they're first year playing pro, first year living on their own, cooking their own meals, first year playing this many games, and just the pressure of it. So it is. That's why I have a job. That's why we have the American Hockey League, and so you can go through their warts of their inconsistency, and everybody has something they need to work on. And because if you come up here and you're not ready, it's like having a sore thumb. You're going to stand out in the wrong way.
You don't want to be the guy that stands out in the wrong way. No. But you also had a follow-up on LaRue specifically, and that is containing the emotions. And at his age, I'm really interested in what that translates to and how close he is to being able to help the team. Because that's where everybody is here. It's like, okay, you can tell me all about these things, about these guys that are doing Milwaukee. Take Jared, for example, right? This is Jared being Jared. But Jared is one that is – and Joe Rexroy, I think, largely has the same viewpoint. You can talk all you want about the specifics of the strengths and the weaknesses of the guys in Milwaukee. And we got Nick Kieser back there. He's listening to everything that Scott Nichols says, the details and, you know, what works about it. There are a lot of people here that are like, just show me the results when the guy gets to Nashville. Tell me when he's ready, and then let me see it. And then I'll get excited about young players. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They don't want to see the recipe being made and cooked and marinated, and they don't want to know about the marination. All they want is the bottom line: is this guy ready to help this team right now?
Yeah, and it doesn't.
And why? Work. And if it hasn't happened today, why hasn't it happened?
It doesn't work that way. He said it's a man's game. It's a tough one. And you know, we were talking about LaRue. You know, I look at Matt Rempe, and if you followed him and with the Rangers, like, he can impact a game. He can go out there. He can stir it up. He'll fight. He'll bang bodies. He got a couple goals in the playoffs. And then he takes a penalty, and the other team scores, and they lose the game. And then you're looking at him like, oh, you can't take that penalty. And it's just that fine line where you're asking a guy like LaRue to come up and play his game, play a physical, hard game, play the right way, but you can't play over it. And if you play it over it at the wrong time – now, everyone takes penalties, right? But if Connor McDavid takes a penalty, you go, well, he's going to get us 4 points during the game, so that counteracts it. As a young player, you don't have a lot of juice to make up for that bad penalty. And so those are the little things that you learn while you're playing in Milwaukee, and that's why you want to play in pressure games to get through that, you know? I heard Jared, and he poo-poos all over Calder Cup. Like, who cares if they win the Calder Cup? Who right. cares if they win the trophy in the AHL? It's all about what you're doing here.
Right. But
you become a good player, is going through those battles and going through, as Raycroft was talking about, you have an injury. You're a goalie. You don't feel good. Can you find a way to win at the NHL level? Well, you're not going to win at the NHL level if you can't battle through those injuries at the AHL level and win there. You know, like, you got to work through the hard times. And, you know, it's great. You see guys that get called up all the time and they play 10 games that are, wow, this kid is awesome. And then all of a sudden this summer goes by and then they come in, they think they're going to play in the NHL. It's not that easy.
When we come back, we'll get a little more on Scott Nichols specifically about LaRue, and then something else I want to ask about a young player making that transition, because it would make Barry Trotz's job a lot easier if some of these prospects, the more that hit, like Evangelista did, it is gold, because it adds the levels to your team, the layers that you need to win. And you do it without taking up a lot of your salary.
Yeah.
Because like when they're young, they're making less than $1 million.
Wyatt Johnston and who's that? Stankoven.
Stankoven, yeah.
You know, like, these guys come in, they're legit players.
They move the needle.
And they're not making any money. They're not taking a chunk out.
That's huge.
That's huge.
When we come back, we'll wrap up this hour then.
Pretty boy Vincenzo did that.
Yes. NFL Hall of Fame offensive lineman Steve Hutchinson is going to join us at 2:20. Played for the Titans, the Seahawks, the Vikings. And with all of the Titans theme of can they fix the offensive line, he will be a great perspective that we're going to hear during the next hour. So make sure you're listening there as well. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. Stay tuned. More coming.
It's not the way it used to be. You can't stir it up as much as you used to, but those guys are still effective. You're like Kachuk, the guys that get under guys' skin and play that grind game, it's still so effective. Have you noticed him kind of reeling that in and controlling that more?
A little bit, but he's got a good GM where I'm probably a little more lenient with him than most people, but no, he's a gamer. There isn't a moment too big for him. He He's just on the little the maturity side of things. Like he's emotionally vested into every game, and that's what makes him go. And he's going to have some hiccups, and he's got to balance that. That's the tightrope that all those players that he, you know, mimics or idolizes. They're kind of like the same thing. But for a young player, for a 20-year-old kid, his stick, his hockey sense, his wall play has been fantastic. He's from probably the hash marks down. He creates a lot. He slips off checks. He's going to be a good player because they're hard to have that, how to be hardwired like he is. It's really tough to teach that. I think you're born with it a little bit, and he's got it. Now you just gotta harness some of it, but not take it away from him. So
that's Scott Nichol, Predators assistant GM, and a guy that kind of had that hardwired edge to his game when he played, right?
I never went by him without having a stick in my ribs or something. It's just like always something.
So he knows what that's like, and as he said, it's hard to teach. But at the same time, and he's talking about Zach LaRue, a Predator first-round draft pick from a couple years ago. He played his first professional season this last year at age 20, one of the 5 to 10 youngest players in the league. Yep. when you get down to it, or in that younger group. Kemmel, I think, was he's a year younger, so he was really in like the top 3 or 4. So you got to put in perspective how young these guys are playing against men, and yet LaRue excelled very well. 10 goals in the playoffs, 19 in the regular season, and the penalty minutes, 197 in the regular season, 62 more in the postseason.
And Scooter went on to talk about, you know, you can't hurt your team by taking penalties, and we need you on the ice. You're a good player, so you need to reel it in. You can't take misconducts and that kind of thing.
So channeling it, right?
You got to channel it, but again, you need to have that. I heard an interview with LaRue talking about, you know, growing up, he'd fight his brother. Like, they'd play, you know, Monopoly, and the table would get thrown, and they'd be swinging at each other. Like, he's got a competitive. And you have to be hardwired to do that. You can't teach someone grit as much as you
think. It's just your natural disposition.
Yeah,
right?
And if you're a perimeter player and you're nasty, that's great. Go ahead, be a perimeter player. You know, like that's good. But if you want to score goals at the NHL level and make that jump, you got to find a way to show that grit down low, slide off checks, get in around the net. You know, you're going to watch tonight. Matthew Tkachuk is one of the best. He stirs it up. He's always in the mix because he's always going, slipping behind the crease and getting in there and getting dirty. And that's where the goals are. That's where you find the cookies, and you got to have that drive to get there. I think LaRue has that, and he's just got to fine-tune it. And I think, as Scooter said, he's a good GM to have. You know, he's a good GM because he's a little more lenient with that. He understands that, and he wants that.
When you break into the league, what is that like for a young player that wants to play like that? But it's got to be hard.
He also threw out names. He threw out names like Marchand. He threw out Bertuzzi. These guys, they came into the league. Brad Marchand is like a, I mean,
and Marchand's not a huge guy, right?
He was a snot. I mean, he was just licking guys, spitting on guys, sticking guys, running guys. He was doing whatever he thought he had to do to get in the league, and then his skill came on. Now he's a captain of the Bruins, and he's scoring big goals all the time, but he's got that tenacity. You know, he created that role where he's going to be a dog on a bone, and so I think you have to balance that, and I think Marchand's done that, and they're looking for LaRue to do kind of that role. If he falls in to be a great player, I mean, that would be awesome. He's got the skill. He's got the hands. Now he's got to, you know, fine-tune. And that's what the minors are for. That's what development is for. It doesn't just happen for everyone. You know, I was always blown away. Gus Nyquist was a guy who played for Detroit, and he just came up, and he was awesome right away. And I said, well, where does he come from? Well, he was playing in the minors for a long time. Detroit did that with their players to get them ready for the NHL. They're patient with them. You have to be patient with these guys.
Great stuff. That's a guy to watch for sure going into training camp next year, Zach LaRue, with the jump he made in his first year in Milwaukee. It's a good sign that a first-round pick like that is progressing that quick. A even though everybody like wants to.
Yeah, Reed Schaefer, I think they're high on him. He's going to be a player that can play with that little edge. You know, it takes time, though.
We're going to go into our final hour of the show. Yeah, patience is a virtue for sure, but people are like, show me the results. I want to see it.
Like a hospital.
A lot of patience.
A lot of patience.
I had to remember the dad joke. I had heard that before along the way somewhere from Skillsy. Yeah. Dad joke Friday, Nick.
He brought it to the table.
File that away. When D-Mace gets back, we'll fire that at him. I think he'll like that one.
Oh, yeah.
He likes the dad jokes. All right, now we're going to change gears. We're going to talk some football in the last hour of the show. Steve Hutchinson's going to join us. We'll also get back to Hal's talk about Tom Brady, unique perspective growing up in Boston, keep an eye on the Boston
Hutch team. Hutch played with him in Michigan.
He did, and we can talk, too, about the transition to a broadcaster, which Hal's very familiar with.
And Hutch did that, too. He was broadcasting for the Big Ten for a little bit.
I'm also keeping an eye on the Mets, as I always am. Hal, you would appreciate this. Wrigley Field, which you've never been to, as you said. Day game at Wrigley. Got to make it happen. That's got to be on your bucket list. Okay, I'll go with you.
I was actually talking to Hutch, and he said, "Let's do it."
You have to do it. Sit in the bleachers. Sit in the outfield.
Yeah,
it'll be worth it. But
just get me in.
You will appreciate this play this guy made. This is my dream, Nick. Foul ball hit by a Met Cub fan sitting on the aisle. He's got the hat on. He's got the beer in one hand. He makes a great. This ball is coming. At about 100, I don't know, 85, 90 miles. It's coming hot. He snags it with one hand. He knows the camera's on him. The crowd's cheering for him. He guzzles the beer.
Yeah.
Flips the ball to the kid. Now, that's a perfect day. And that's nothing could go wrong.
The only question I have is, this is a grown man, assuming he's over 21 because he's got a beer.
Yeah.
Do you bring your glove to the ballpark?
I think once you reach 21, like, maybe 18... I think to really pull off the big time play, you got to make the bare hand catch.
Yeah, I mean,
when you're a kid, I'm all about bringing the glove.
I have questions about a grown man bringing a glove to a ballpark. Unless you're playing on the field.
Look, don't bring me down this rabbit hole. But there are people that bring the glove. They also study. They go to batting practice and they collect.
Willie, I know you bring the score sheet, right?
I've been known to keep score.
You bring the score sheet. Yeah. And I'll
buy the scorecard and keep score. Yeah, I'll do it.
A little momentum.
That's a good question. I want our listeners to come back.
You got
to
learn that. Like, that's a rite of passage. You got to learn how to do it.
Because I might be wrong.
I can still do it.
I look at an adult. You know, if you're bringing your kid, maybe you, hey, let's teach bring him how our to gloves. Score. Yeah. Let's bring our gloves.
No, I don't. I think the adult, you don't bring the glove. You got to make the bare hand catch.
Yeah.
You got to make and.
I think you have to. Yeah. I don't want to question, but I do.
And then the other dilemma now, because now there's increased pressure handing the ball to a kid, even if you don't have your kid there. You look around.
Yeah, you got to give it to a kid.
You can get some scowls how if much you is, decide just to keep
how,
the ball.
How much is that ball worth?
Right.
I don't know.
Sometimes it's worth something.
If that was a 60th depends homer, on who hit it. I think I might keep that one.
If you're sitting in the bleachers at Wrigley, you're going to catch
a
home run
ball, kid.
Yeah, it could be
not this one.
Somebody's 200th home run. They're going to come asking for that ball.
Yeah.
And, of course, you're at a Cubs game. If the other team hits the home run, you got to throw it back.
That's right.
But yeah, I can see you. That. You could fire that thing.
Oh,
back.
I'm all for that.
You got to hit the
I
cutoff, man.
I love that.
Oh, that's going to happen. That. Skillsy and the bleachers at Wrigley, watch out. That's going to be awesome. TV. All right, we're coming back with the final hour of the
all
show.
All for
next.
Chugging the beer, though, either way.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.